shit.
I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
But fans can be the harshest critics, you know.
And they often are.
A wife is often the harshest critic of her husband.
I thought I was invincible. That's what you're trained to believe as a sports person.
There was 4 million people in Ireland who knew much more about managing football teams than I did. When it comes to music, I can spoof it the best.
Your sporting career is the best time you'll have. And, you know, you have to hang on to it for as long as your life, because everything else is pretty crappy.
And this is not light. Stephen Rothschild has never spoken to Jimmy McGuinness in his life.
Now for our Saturday panel and our review of the week. We are streaming right now across all of our social platforms and on the OTB Sports app as well. 53106 to get your text messages into us, or you can tweet us at Off the Ball. Get whatever you want off your chest and we'll hopefully discuss it over the next hour or so, because joining me on this week's panel reviewing the week that was is chief sports writer of the Irish Daily Star, Kieran Cunningham, former Irish basketball manager, captain and sports commentator Timmy McCarthy, as well as former Irish rugby international Alison Miller. Guys, thanks a million for joining me this afternoon. There's a lot to get through, and I think it seems with the week that's been, a lot of it is tinged with some element of COVID-19 to it.
Yeah, definitely. I think COVID restrictions and the high number of cases is really putting sport in doubt. So I think we all have a part to play and get behind all these restrictions. But I think it's difficult for sport, especially there's a lot of talk about the GAA and the league games commencing this weekend. So I suppose we'll just have to wait and see how it all goes.
Before we dive in with all of it as well, Alison, I will just mention as well, good week for you personally, because the World Rugby Awards for the decade were announced during the week as well, and you've been nominated for your very, very famous try against New Zealand back in the 2014 World Cup. That's one of five tries nominated for the International Rugby Players Women's 15s Try of the Decade. A nice feeling, is it?
I suppose it's great memories of that day back in Marcoussi when we met New Zealand. Obviously, it was a team effort. I was the one who finished it off. I probably scored better tries in my time, but I suppose it's not often you score a try against New Zealand to put them out of the World Cup. So, yeah, great memories. Up against some tough candidates there and some far more impressive tries. So we'll see how the voting goes.
Come on, sell it to us now. This is your chance to put the word out there. It's a public vote. People can go and vote for it. Tell us, where are we going to vote for it and why should we be voting for it?
You should vote for it because we're Ireland. Obviously, Jamie Heaslip is up for the men's try of the decade as well. So I suppose we're Irish, we're great at getting behind our teams and our players. So I know Irish Rugby have a link on it to the World Rugby site. So that's where you can vote.
Timmy and Kieran, if there's a sport we could excel at, it is hijacking a public vote, isn't it?
Well, from my point of view, we definitely should vote for Alison because, you know, if it is a public vote, it's just numbers. I mean, what do we have enough numbers in this country is another question. But we definitely should be given her the opportunity, you know.
Well, if Ronnie O'Brien could get Times Man of the Century, it was fringe player Juventus Bray, I think Alison definitely deserves it.
Certainly does. So we'll get into the action itself, and I think we have to probably start with the GA and the resumption of the inter-county season this weekend. The Allianz League match is taking place. There's quite a few this afternoon. One of those is already underway. They're into the second half already between Wicklow and Antrim in the Allianz Football League Division 4. Wicklow 3-6 to 2 points in front there. And there's a few other games throwing in at 2 o'clock. Monaghan and Kerry in Division 1. Westmeath and Laois in Division 2 as well. And Dublin and Tyrone in the All-Ireland Under-20 Football Championship semi-final. That's also a 2 o'clock start in Limerick. I suppose the pressing news that came overnight, guys, was the Gaelic Players Association yesterday evening. They released the findings of the survey that they put out towards their players this week, just to bring people up to speed on the details if they missed the news round. So there was a 76% response rate from the members in the 48 hours of the survey. 1,695 players responded to it. The key findings were that 52% of inter-county hurlers and footballers want to proceed with the season. 24% of them only want to play if the implementation of COVID-19 protocols is improved, and 24% of respondents do not want to proceed with the 2020 season. The key findings, though, as well on top of it, were they want stronger testing protocols, stricter compliance and oversight of the protocols in all counties, and then also the use of the safest venues for the games. That includes the location and training facilities as well. So there's plenty to take in from that, guys. I did see a lot of people questioning maybe why were the GPA leaving it this late to put that survey out. But on the flip side of it, so much has changed over the last 2 weeks. If they had done this survey 2-3 weeks ago, the results would probably be a hell of a lot different. And if they were to do the result, if they were to do the survey probably on Monday morning coming, you could probably get even more different results. So like, they had to do it to, as close to the date as possible, I would suggest anyway.
I would say, Neil, from my point of view, I think it's a fascinating survey because it's 52-48. I know it's 24 and 24, but the 24 who said they would only want to play if things were improved basically means right now they don't want to play, if you take that to its full conclusion. So it's very marginal. I mean, you know, they're obviously not happy. I mean, 48% of them are not happy with either playing or with the current COVID situation. So it's a huge risk. In light of what's happened in the country in the last 2 weeks, I think the resumption of the GAA is a huge risk for the players and obviously for the families of the players. The second thing I think is that, what about the counties that can't field teams because, you know, their players have COVID illnesses? So it's a huge risk and a huge decision. And it's one that I think there's a big question mark about.
I think, I suppose, some of the antics at the county finals haven't helped matters. I think GAA players are always seen as heroes for your working full-time jobs and then going back in on their Monday to their employers. But I think there is a concern by employers of these players as well that they have players coming into different workplaces after playing a game, after travelling. So it's not just, I think there is the concerns of employers of these players as well. But I think all those players are in different scenarios. There's going to be younger players living with older parents, some grandparents. I think there's parents or players that are not at risk or they don't have people at risk within their families. But I think it's a really evolving situation with COVID. And I think it's very hard to plan with COVID because you plan a week or two ahead and things change so much. But I think, you know, for those players, they obviously, you know, the percentages are there, those that want to play. But, you know, there's so much more than just the playing of the game. It's the logistics of the next day and the workplace that they're going into. And there has been said that some players have said that their employers are not happy with them coming in on a Monday morning, having travelled wherever to the game and, you know, playing a contact game. So there's the other side of that. And is there an anti-GAA sentiment kind of creeping in because everyone else is, you're not allowed to visit your mother or your father, but you can travel across the country. So it's an interesting one with a lot of perspectives to take into account.
Mm-hmm. And Kieran as well, I think another interesting part of it as well is that the players voted, 86% of them voted for that the GPA's National Executive Committee have been now mandated by the players to make any further decisions regarding the continuation of the season. So, you know, if things do change over the next few days and if this weekend doesn't go particularly well, like, there is a possibility that they don't really have to survey the players all over again. It's going to be with this select committee who can actually make the decision for the players.
Yeah. Yeah, like, we've seen developments today, like Leitrim aren't fulfilling the league fixture away to Down. I would be very curious to see a breakdown of the players' votes because, you know, we have seen people who have been vocal, like Michael Quinn in Longford, about his concerns. John Heslin of Westmeath, the footballer, tweeted about during the week. Eddie Brennan, the Laois hurling manager. And what Longford, Westmeath football, and Laois hurling have in common is they're not going to win silverware this year. You know, we know that. And I think, you know, you do hear the likes of James McCarthy with Dublin saying it's a personal choice, you know, anybody wants to pull out can. And they're all gung-ho about it. But I think from a lot of other counties, they're looking at this congested championship, and they think there might well be a risk in there, and they're questioning why they should go ahead with it. And I actually haven't heard a compelling argument for the championship to go ahead yet, because it will be a very hollowed-out, husk of a competition. It'll be very unlike anything we've seen before. And the way I had always associated GAA championship is with community. And like you're from Limerick, you would remember when Limerick won the All-Ireland. Mm. And I would say a lot of the stuff you remember around that isn't to do with the actual games, but it's the celebrations around it, the homecoming, etc. And when that's all gone, and when even players don't go back on a bus with the cup, you know, they'd all have to travel in cars separately. I just think it's been seriously devalued, and I'd question whether it's worth going ahead, given the risk.
Guys, is that an important point, the fact that if we're looking ahead towards the week before Christmas and the possibility of major celebrations? Because I think all of us can probably realise, while it was really disappointing to see some of the scenes after the club finals, there is an element of human nature there that if someone, for example, you know, breaks a long-awaited run for an All-Ireland Championship, like just pulling Mayo out of the sky there, it's going to be so hard to see that if Mayo were to win an All-Ireland Football Championship that those fans will stay in their homes and not celebrate it. And I don't think any of us want to be looking at, you know, videos on Twitter or pictures on Twitter of gatherings and people not social distancing. But it probably is a reality that that is going to be happening.
Well, I think from my point of view, Ciarán, I was coaching St. Bridget's to win the Roscommon Senior Football Championship a number of weeks ago. And there was 200 people allowed in at the time. And even though people tried to social distance, we won the county final against Pádraig Pearse's, it gets very hard. And as the evening goes on, then people have a few drinks and it gets more difficult. So, you know, if you think about it, if, you know, if an inter-county team wins, irrespective of who wins the hurling or football, there will be celebrations in each of the individual clubs of the players of the county. And you know, like we talk about elite athletes. I mean, this week, hockey and my own sport, basketball, as elite athletes, decides to cancel their leagues until further notice. So, you know, GA are not professional athletes. And that's why there's a difference, you know, if you look at the FAI and even the debacle we talked about that they got into last weekend in the Premiership and, you know, in the rugby coming up. It's slightly different because they're professionals. It's a slightly different arena. The GA is an amateur situation. And I think the fact that the vote is, you know, is not conclusive at 52, as I would say, against 48 with combination of 224s. I really think that this is not a good decision for the GA to try and squeeze this whole thing in. As COVID is getting worse, the GA situation is going to come under more pressure. You know, Ciarán made a point, Leitrim pulled out, you'll have other teams won't be able to field their best players at different stages. I think it's too big a risk. And if I was involved, I'd be asking for it to be cancelled.
Yeah, it is, as you say there. Like, you would hope that inter-county teams are much more conscientious than the clubs. And they have more resources. They've got, you know, COVID officers that are working full time. They've got their medical staff. So you'd hope that the games can be played safely. What those fans do, like, that's personal responsibility. And those people that are going out and celebrating if Mayo won in All-Ireland, like, that's really hard to control because they're going off their own bat, maybe, I don't know, to a house party, whatever, celebrating. But, like, the players will want to play. And if you ask me, like, I would, like, back when I was playing rugby, I'd love to win a World Cup final and celebrate myself with a cup of tea and know that I've won. So there's a player's perspective as well, that they are competitive, that they want to play the games. But on the other hand, you have that responsibility to society that you don't want a big win to cause people celebrating and transmitting the virus around the community. But it's a difficult one because are those players responsible for the actions of their fans and their supporters? So it's a really, really tough one. I think at the moment, the way the cases are going, it does seem, you know, well, I suppose, unusual that you cannot do certain basic things, but then, you know, a championship is starting off. So it's really difficult because, as you said, you have those players, 52% said they should go ahead, 24% wants improved, you know, COVID restrictions. But those players are competitive at the end of the day and want to win, those that do want to play. But can they be responsible for the fans that are just not showing good behaviour? So it's a very difficult one to try and answer, really.
Mm-hmm. Ciarán, you referenced obviously the fact that Leitrim had to forfeit a game today because they were waiting on a number of players to get results back. Is it important that we highlight that, you know, Leitrim have done the right thing here now? Because I think myself and Will were talking about it on the news around that. There was a worry a few months back that if a situation like this arose that, you know, people might just be a little bit selfish and have too much tunnel vision about wanting to win an important game, because this was an important game for Leitrim as well. But they've come out, they've done the right thing, and they've, you know, they pulled their players away from it and they've withdrawn from the game because, as we've always said, there are more important things than the result.
Yeah, because that is like, no matter how much we love the GA or how much we love sport, I think it's important to put sport in its proper place. There's a far bigger picture at play here and all over the world at the moment. And I think, you know, it's irritated me a bit that mental health has been weaponized, that people have kept on bringing up that this will give a huge lift to the mental health of the nation. Where is that coming from? Like, you have to be able to back up that with evidence and data. And I think it's a bit dangerous to throw that out there. And sometimes it's just because it suits somebody's agenda, they want the championship to go ahead, that they throw that out there. And I think that devalues the importance of mental health. Like, the flip side there of what you were saying about Leitrim is I heard John Doyle the other day, the former Kildare footballer, and he was saying if he was preparing for an All-Ireland final with Kildare and he had maybe one or two of the symptoms, he thinks he'd keep quiet. And I think players are so tunnel visioned at times, that temptation will be there with big games, and it could be an issue down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Kieran, just to develop that point, you know, like, the league will finish and the championship will finish and they could get away with it. You know, nobody could be infected and they could get away with it. But the risk of one person getting affected and dying from it is a risk. And for me, that risk is not worth taking. And, I remember when I was a player, we just want to play. Your point about, you know, when you have an injury, you really don't want to see you have a bad injury or you're struggling because you want to play. So you're trying to, as a player, you want to play. When you become a coach, you have a different view of those things. But you do want to play. But I said this a number of months ago, Neil, that, you know, about the Olympics, when we were talking about the Olympics, I said, it's not worth one life. The All-Ireland Championship, okay, the National League or any sport is not worth one life. And if there's a risk, and right now, COVID is out of control in this country. You know, COVID is completely out of control in this country because of personal decisions that people are making and because of governmental inaction, in my view. We're out of control, and now we're trying to fit sport into it. And I'm saying this, it's not worth one life. And if there's a risk, we should take out the sport and say, let's not, you know, have any risk to anybody.
We just have a couple of minutes before I have to go take an ad break, but one final thing I might ask, and we can return to it as well after the ad break as well, is that I know hindsight is fantastic. Would it have been better to go into a situation where the inter-county game was scrapped for the entire year and they were able to keep GA, you know, locally at a club level and, you know, just develop some sort of made-up kind of regional league so that, as you pointed out, Kieran, the people who've been speaking about mental health and the impact that has, that you can still go out, you can still train and you can still play those matches, but there isn't necessarily going to be a huge amount at stake. And that negates the possibility of large gatherings before and afterwards of huge celebrations.
Well, I think because of the numbers we have, I think there wouldn't be much chance of club stuff going ahead either.
But also it means that if we had got to a stage where we are now, where things had got quite bad, that you could cancel these training sessions, you could cancel the matches, and you weren't necessarily losing a huge amount.
Yeah. Well, it's a fair point, but I think an issue as well is that there was never an All-Ireland approach taken, and that's become, I think that became a massive problem over the last few weeks especially, because the numbers soared in the north, and then they soared in the border counties, Donegal, Cavan, Monaghan. And I think, you know, sport in Ireland, largely outside of soccer, virtually all sport in Ireland is organised on an All-Ireland basis. So there's so many things here that are organised on an All-Ireland basis. And a major health issue like this should have been confronted on an All-Ireland basis too.
Mm-hmm. Certainly is. Right, we will return to it after the break. Just want to keep you updated on the scores from elsewhere. 62 minutes played at Goodison Park and it's Everton 1, Liverpool 1. Both of those goals scored in the first half. It was Sadio Mane who gave Liverpool the lead and then Michael Keane equalising for Everton. And then in the Old Firm derby at Celtic Park, at half-time, Rangers were leading 1-0 and the latest score at the moment, 2-0 now to Rangers. Conor Goldson has scored his second goal. There's just over an hour played. He added to his first goal on 54 minutes. Since then, Scott Arfield and Scott Brown have had a couple of yellow cards between them as well. We'll be back after the break with more from our Saturday panel with Kieran Cunningham, Alison Miller and Timmy McCarthy.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
Now, you're very welcome back to our Saturday panel here on this Saturday's Off the Ball. Neil Tracy sitting in with you until 5 o'clock this evening. Just a reminder as well, The 20 by 20 campaign will be marking its conclusion next week and celebrating a transformative two-year movement for women in sport. And everyone is invited to this virtual event that is going to be happening at midday on this coming Wednesday, October 21st. You can join legends of Irish and international sport like Martina Navratilova, Ada Hegerberg, Rachel Blackmore, Brian O'Driscoll, Sonia O'Sullivan, and even more guests as well. They'll be discussing and debating what future we want for women in sport in Ireland. Check out the Think It, Ask It hashtag. That is hashtag Think It, Ask It, or the 20 by 20 social media channels for details on how to register. And OTB Sports is a proud partner and supporter of the 20 by 20 movement. Also as well, we have had another goal at Goodison Park. Liverpool now 2-1 up on Everton. Beautiful finish from Mo Salah, caught it on the half volley from the edge of the box. So 73 minutes played, Liverpool 2-1 up there. We'll try bring you a report as soon as we can from that game at Goodison Park. And also as well, oh, I think we do have that Everton goal ready to go. Yeah, Shane Pennington from Goodison Park.
It's Everton 1, Liverpool 2, and the champions back in front here, courtesy of Mo Salah, who was a good cross down the right-hand side from Trent Alexander-Arnold, but terrible defending from Yerry Mina. He got his clearance all wrong, allowed it to drop to Salah on the edge of the box, and from 18 yards, Salah's half-volley flew into the left-hand side of the goal. It's Everton 1, Liverpool 2.
Kieran Cunningham, Timmy McCarthy and Alison Miller are joining me on the Saturday panel for the second part of our discussion. Guys, there's probably just a couple more points on the GA before we move on to the week that was for the Irish soccer team and their disappointing results. A couple of texts in here, and one of them interesting. When foot and mouth was in Armagh in 2001, all football was aborted and it was a disease in animals. We have a nationwide disease for humans now, so the right thing to do is stop. We will get over it in the next few years. That is from Michael. And then this second text. The problem is players will feel pressured into playing, not forced into it. If there are 30 players on a panel and 28 want to play, but two of them don't, then those two players will feel the pressure from their teammates. That is from Colin in Limerick. I think that's a very interesting one, guys. How important a role do inter-county managers and probably captains or leadership committees on teams, how important a role do they have now over the coming weeks to make sure that there is no stigma put on players that want to sit out or don't feel comfortable playing and that they can step aside and not, you know, be worrying about is it going to be impacting their chances of being selected next year or the year after?
I actually read an article on The Independent yesterday with Cork captain Dearne O'Sullivan about how they had a meeting and just, you know, really reiterated that if a player wasn't comfortable playing, that it was perfectly fine, that we were there to support them and that it wouldn't go against them then if they wanted to play the next year. And I think, you know, a player might feel pressure as that text came in, and all, I suppose, you would hope from the managers and the captain is that they can take away that pressure and let players, if they don't want to play, you know, not have that kind of pressure there that they do have to play. You hope that there is conversations that can be had among the coach and the manager, and if any player is feeling uncomfortable, that they don't feel that pressure to have to play. You know, it's a difficult one, but if teams can be open and have those conversations, hopefully those players aren't feeling under pressure to go out and play. Like we talked about players hiding symptoms. Sean Kavanagh said as well that he was afraid that players would hide symptoms like they did with injuries. You hope they have more personal responsibility. You know, with an injury, you could harm yourself forever. But with this virus, you know, you could be responsible for the death of someone in the community. So it's a lot more serious. So it's a difficult one when players feel under pressure. But if you have a good culture within the team, hopefully that pressure won't be there. But it's definitely not an easy one to answer.
I would say, Neil, that it will depend on who the player is. So let's just take, if it was David Clifford in Kerry or Kieran Kilkenny in Dublin, you know, I'm not sure, no, there'd be a lot of comfort and support for them not to play now. I think that would, you know, if you're number 30 in the panel and you're not happy with playing, you're really not going to make a big difference. You'd get away with it. But if you're the star player like a Kieran Kilkenny or David Clifford, the pressure will be enormous on them. There's no doubts. And, you know, like county managers and county boards will come out and say, we'll support our players and we'll do all that. That's all fine until it becomes your star player. And then you'll see the real challenge out that counties and individuals would have. Look, the foot and mouth is a very interesting text. I think it's a very interesting text. Animals were diseased and the football was stopped. We have humans here dying in this country, sadly, on a daily basis or by daily basis, right? This disease, you know, was dealt with in the summer, and, you know, we just didn't stay the course for another few weeks and probably squash it. But now it's rampant. And, you know, sport is, you know, Kieran made a point earlier, sport is not that relevant. You know, I mean, I love sport, and Alison, and we all love sport, but it's not that relevant when we have a public health issue. And I was listening to the news there, you know, and you know, Thomas Byrne saying, like, well, you know, we're on top of it. We're not on top of this, like. And I just really believe that for amateurs to be playing sport in this environment is wrong.
Interesting. Yeah, you finished there with, like, amateurs playing sport, as you say, you're saying is wrong. It's interesting to finish on that part as well, Kieran, because we've had mixed messaging over whether it's amateurs or professionals who are going to be allowed to play if we do move into level five. Mixed messaging, because Leo Varadkar on Today FM a couple of days ago, he said that the inter-county season would be gone if we move into level five. Whereas last week, Tony Holan wrote that no matches or sports events would be permitted, exemption for professional, elite or senior inter-county or horse racing behind closed doors would be allowed under level five. So do we actually kind of know where we stand with it?
Like, they're elite in the way they train and play and perform, but they're not professional in the sense that we can, like, a professional rugby team or soccer team can stay within a bubble or their team environment and keep them there for how long as they need to. Like, they, all these players have to go back the next day to work. And so, yes, they're elite in terms of how they play and train, but they're not professional in terms of that's all they do. So that's, you know, hugely problematic.
And Kieran, you were coming in there?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, because if you asked me 3 or 4 days ago would the championships go ahead, I would have been very, very confident they would. This morning, I would think there's a very real chance it won't go ahead, because it's a constantly evolving, constantly changing situation. And I think of that, even that GPA survey, if it was taken today or was taken on Monday, I have a feeling that more players would come out, would be against going ahead with the championship, because I think the penny is dropping with people that we're back in a very serious situation. And that, you know, there has been a lot of pushback against the lockdown and against all the restrictions we've had to deal with over the last few months, because people are cranky and fed up with it, and it's very understandable that they are. But at the same time, it's very necessary that we do the right thing or numbers will soar. And I think it's hitting home now in people that for the sake of a 7-week championship with nobody there, with the trophies being lifted in an empty stadium, with no homecoming, etc., and they're wondering, is it worthwhile? And, you know, just to go back very quickly to a point Timmy made, I agree with that around the David Clifford and the Kieran Kilkennys or the TJ Reeds, how difficult would be for them, you know, the pressure they would feel to play. But I think it's also the case for a guy maybe who's just getting onto the team this year or just on the fringes of the team. And if they think, if they have concerns and they think, well, if I step away, will the manager hold it against me next year? At least the TJ Reeds and the Clippers are secure in their spot. I think some other guys, there is pressure there, you know, to just keep their head down and do just get on with it.
Mm-hmm. Certainly is. Royce, I think we probably need to get around to a couple more topics. Unfortunately, COVID dominated the international football break as well. And it threw up the logistical nightmare that is facing international football, because Dan McDonald made a good point last week when we were discussing, I suppose, the first positive cases in the Irish camp, that the point of the bubble is that it's a bubble. And we've clearly seen that it's incredibly hard for those professional players to leave the bubble they've been in at their Premier League clubs or Championship clubs or wherever it is they're playing. You can't necessarily just start a new one on a Monday morning and have it for 10 days and then travel back again. Like, it has turned up. We have another international break here and coming up in a few weeks' time. It doesn't seem like it's going to be called off or anything like that, or games are going to be moved. And, like, it was just a complete nightmare.
Yeah. Jurgen Klopp signposted in the press conference before the international break. You know, we talked about how they had things under control to an extent in the Premier League with all the bubbles put in place. But now players were flying all over the world, going to different countries, you know, a huge amount of different countries and different continents. Like, Ireland played in 3 different countries in the space of a week. Then the players went back to a different country again in England, another country in Scotland. One player went to Belgium, and Jack Byrne was in Ireland. So it's very hard when countries have different restrictions, regulations, to keep on top of everything. And you've seen like NFL and NBA players in America are among the best paid athletes in the world. There's been a huge amount of COVID cases within their camps. Cristiano Ronaldo is probably the best paid soccer player in the world. He's tested positive for COVID. So it's very, very hard to keep out. And what happened with Ireland over the last 2 weeks was extraordinary. But it might happen again in November. There's no guarantees it won't, because there's no sign things will improve significantly in that time period.
Timmy, Alison, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, well, my thoughts on the international is that it was the first time I really enjoyed watching Ireland, because I thought we played great football.
We'll get to that in a minute.
I mean, I just think we played great football. We just can't score. We just don't. I mean, we had enough chances to score in every game, but we just don't have enough talent to score. You know, we don't have enough players, not just in the forward sense, like the Robbie Keane's or even Niall Quinn for all the things that he brought to us. He scored goals. But we don't have that. But I really enjoy the football. The farce about the false positive shows how difficult this thing is. I mean, there's no doubts. And, you know, Kieran's point, like, you know, they were back to four or five different countries, you know, like when they finished with the bubble regime, they played in three different countries. I mean, the hardest thing that we have to realise as sports people, as those sports fans, and as people who talk about sport, is health, the world's health is under pressure. And until we get a vaccine and antibodies and antidotes, this is going to continue. And you referenced the NBA. I watched the NBA. They brought them all to Disneyland. So they brought the entire NBA teams for the playoffs into Disneyland, and they still had problems. The golfers in an isolated sport are still being tested positive. So as long as you have people mingling with people, you're going to have positive tests. And really, you know, in the international sense, the value of playing international football, you know, over the next few months is limited in reality. So, you know, a bit like the GAA, I don't see any value in playing international games, you know, these nation cups over the next few months, you know.
I do need to jump in here now and interrupt, guys. We have another goal at Goodison Park. Shane Pennington.
It's Everton 2, Liverpool 2. I told you there could be more goals in this one, yeah. And Everton equalised courtesy of that man once again, Dominic Calvert-Lewin. It came down the left-hand side with Luca Dean again to the byline, picked out a brilliant cross 6 yards out, and there was Calvert-Lewin to just head back across the goal and into the left-hand bottom corner of Adrian's net. It's Everton 2, Liverpool 2.
Alison, Timmy was speaking there just before we went and took that goal from Goodison Park about how, like, it was actually quite enjoyable to watch Ireland again for a change. From your own experience as, you know, as an athlete, have you ever been in a situation where you have had a new coach coming in and pretty much has been, you know, ripping up the playbook and starting from scratch? And how long does it take for all that to bed together?
Yeah, like, it's a difficult one because I think the style that Ireland were playing, and I'm no soccer expert here, so but I mean, like, this could be a thing that could take a long time to change. I mean, you're never going to go and win games if you're trying to play UG defensive all the time. So I mean, maybe it's necessary that, you know, all across the FAI, that teams from, you know, underage systematically right up to senior are playing the same style of football, so that at least when maybe they get to senior level, that they can play a more tacking style of football. You know, we don't have the same amount of players, you know, that there was in the days playing in the Premier Leagues and having huge success. But, I mean, you're never going to win games if you're hugely defensive. But, yes, I've had coaches where they've come in and they've completely changed the style of play. That takes time to do. I've had coaches that have had success. And sometimes it was the actually opposite. We were playing very well, a style that suited the type of players we had. And that was what worked for us. And then you had a coach coming in, maybe trying to play a more attritional style for the type of players. We would have had smaller players and it didn't work. And it's hard for a player sometimes, you know, if you believe in the changes, if you believe as a player in the changes, that's brilliant. And you'll row in behind that and you'll go with it. But if there's a bit of doubt and you don't feel that it's coming off, that's when the system can break down and maybe not everyone's invested into that play. But I think I've certainly seen it with coaches coming in and, you know, at provincial level, you know, whatever, I've had coaches and you think, it's, you know, you're really, you know, they've changed everything that you've ever done and it takes time. And there can be success then if it works and everyone's on the same page and everyone's doing it. But if you have players that are, you know, not buying into it, or, you know, a small minority don't want to go it that way, that's when it's problematic. But I mean, this could take a long time with this team to, and maybe it's not for the current team style of play, but maybe it's, you know, for years to come. But they're definitely not going to get anywhere the way they were playing. So, I mean, they might as well try and play in a certain style, which is definitely better to watch. As I said, I'm no soccer fan or expert, but I mean, you can't always park the bus and have that style. Mm. I mean, it's not going to encourage younger players maybe to get into the game, to get into other sports. I don't know. It's a difficult one.
Timmy, I think one of the key messages there was like the players have to believe in the change. And it certainly does look like the players are believing in the change. Unfortunately, it looks like they're probably not actually just believing in themselves when it comes to the decisive moment in front of goal. If you're the, I'll put you in the coach, the manager's position, which you would have been used to down the years. How do you put that belief back into them?
Well, the first thing you've got to put in, you know, is that you've got to make them clear you're going to sustain doing this. And that's one of the biggest challenges I found when I came in, you know, coaching at club level or at international level, is that the players will look at you, and, you know, especially if you've come in from outside, they're looking at you and they're trying to figure you out. Because first of all, the players are concerned about themselves. What does this mean for me as the player? Secondly, what does this mean for us as a team? So there's two concerns that they're trying to figure out, and they're trying to figure you out then in that sense. So what I would have said, you know, as any team I've coached, is that these are the principles we're going to play by. And whether we win or not, we're going to play by these principles. And that's very important for the manager or coach to have that conviction. Because what I have found is that if you have that conviction, the players get that from you and follow you in that sense. What tends to happen, though, in some cases, like I've seen the League of Ireland over the years, I watched a lot of League of Ireland over the years, and managers would say, we're going to play football. And then, you know, like the other night, Randolph passes the ball from the goalkeeper out and we lose the ball. And then they said, forget the passing from the back, hoof it long. And that's when players find you, well, you don't really sustain it. So to me, as a coach or a manager, it was telling the players, these are the principles that we're going to play by. And we're going to stay with these principles through the good times and through the tough times. And what I found is, players adjust, and you know, even the players that Alison talked about who say I'm not really buying into this, their choices get limited because the team as a group buys into it, and they have a choice then. They either buy in and ultimately, or they go on somewhere else. So I think what Stephen Kenny has done is exceptional. I think your point, Neil, is the players, look, we don't have the talent. Let's kind of keep this real. We don't have the talent at international level, particularly in the attacking and goal-scoring sense. So we're playing really nice football.
It seems we have the talent, certainly, to get to a point in the game plan. It's just that final touch, though, isn't it?
It is. And look, think about it. If you had a Robbie Keane, I mean, you know, Robbie Keane scored for fun. You know, but if you had a Robbie Keane, okay, playing in this team, he would get chances. He would take chances because that's what he's very good at. If you had Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, in our team, he would take the chances. We don't have that. Like, we have players who are in championship teams or in the bottom half of the premiership teams, and we're expecting them to score goals that they don't do every week for their clubs. Like, or when you look at it, our strikers don't score week in, week out. I mean, you know, for the clubs. Like, if you think McGoldrick gets a goal and all of a sudden it's huge news if he gets a goal for the club, that's not going to win you games, particularly at the highest level. So, you know, but we've got to stay with this. We've got to stay with this type of football and hope that we find, you know, Adam Iheda or somebody comes through, you know, Troy Parrott, that, you know, maybe could be a goal scorer in the next period of time.
Kieran, I'll leave the final word to you because we actually have running right out of time. There's so many topics that we're going to have to leave aside, unfortunately. But two more games coming up in November. If they are two bad results, at what point does the pressure actually arrive on Stephen Kenny? Because there has been plenty of goodwill up until now that we can see he's trying something new. But if the results continue to deteriorate, how much trouble is he going to be in?
Well, I don't think he'll be under any pressure from November, but I think, you know, he'll be given the World Cup campaign anyway, and it depends how that goes. Like, I think he deserves two full campaigns, because a World Cup campaign is very hard to qualify out of. It's only 13 European teams go compared to 24 European teams going to the European Championships. But something that went under the radar a bit, Neil, Ireland have gone four games, successive competitive games, without scoring for the first time ever. And if you look at some of the players that come in that Ireland, Irish fans are looking to for goals now, Adamina, Ida, Aaron Connolly, Troy Parrott when he comes back fit, they're really learning their trade at club level. And, you know, there's an expectation that they can deliver at international level, which is asking a lot of them. When you look at their age profile, like historically, Irish players on the national team are, you know, make an impact from their mid to late 20s. Very, very few have made an impact in their teens or early 20s. Outside exceptions, notable exceptions, like John Giles, Liam Brady, Robbie Keane, Damien Duff, there's a handful there. But mostly it's slow burners. And, you know, I think it's very difficult to change the style in an international team compared to a club team because the time you're working with these guys is so limited. Like keeping half an eye on the Merseyside derby there, and you just see how well coached and well drilled teams are when they're working day on day. But international level, particularly with all the disruptions with COVID you had, and players coming in and being ruled out, it's really, really hard to change the style. So it, as Alison says, it's going to take a time. And generally for Ireland managers, things don't end well. So I hope for Stephen they do. I hope he's given two campaigns and he can turn it around. But I think it will take two campaigns at least.
Kieran, Timmy, Alison, thanks a million for joining us this afternoon on our Saturday panel, a review of the week. So much more we could have got through, but thanks a million for joining us.
No problem.
Thank you.
Thank you. The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.